Days and nights fly past, fly past. What am I doing right now? The Buddha has you reflect on that every day. On the one hand, reflecting on how fleeting time is. Our lives are rushing where? Rushing towards death, that's for sure. And when we're going to come slamming into death, we don't know. So you don't know how much time we have. Which comes to the second part of the reflection. What am I doing right now? You know you have the present moment. What are you going to do with it? For the Buddha, that's always the big question. What are you doing with what you've got right now? Because his teaching focuses on doing. It focuses on action. Everything is an act. Even theories are actions. Ideas are actions. Concepts are actions. They're part of a causal chain. Where are they taking us? When you're meditating, sitting here trying to do absolutely nothing, still there's an action going on. There's an intention. So what is your intention right now? To focus on the breath, to get the mind to settle down. And in the process of settling down, learning to see what's going on. And what are you learning to see? Well, you're learning to see more and more clearly what you're doing. So the whole point of the practice is to get clearer on what it is to act. What does it mean to do something? What does it mean to have an intention? In particular, which actions and which intentions are most skillful? Which words, which thoughts, which deeds are most skillful? Always look at things in those terms. I was commenting today on how I was staying with a John Fung, and you'd come to him to report a particular experience in your meditation. He would never tell you, well, this is the first jhana, this is the second jhana, this is whatever. He would tell you what it was, but he would tell you what to do with the experience. Although first off, you'd want to hear about experiences that had happened repeatedly, in fact, ones that you were actually continuing to have right where you're talking to him. That was the best. If you had a particular stage of concentration you could get in, you tried to maintain it and bring it to him, basically. And then he'd tell you what to do with it. That was the important thing. What are you doing with it? And Paul Poot talks about his time with a John Tsao. As a John Tsao would teach meditation, and people would come and ask to meditate. And so he'd teach them Butoh as object of meditation. If they'd want to know what it meant, he'd say, don't ask, just go ahead and do it. And if they wanted to know what's going to happen when I do it, he said, don't ask, just do it, see what happens. And so when they come back and they report what was happening and they'd want to know, is this right? He said, well, that's right or wrong. This is what you should do with it next. And that's the attitude we want to develop in our meditation. Whatever comes up in the meditation, it's always a question, what am I going to do with it? When you have visions, when you have lights, what are you going to do with them? That's the important thing. If you place too many layers of interpretation on them, you get further and further away from the whole point of the practice, which is to be clear about what you're doing. Oftentimes when an insight comes, the important thing is what happens in the mind next after the insight arose. If there's a sense of pride that, hey, I've learned this insight, I've learned this understanding, you've short-circuited the process. The insight is supposed to, if it's genuine insight, it's supposed to help cut through some defilements, and what we tend to do is pile a few more on. So whatever comes up in the practice, ask yourself, what should I do with this? What's the most skillful way of approaching this so that I can learn some good Dharma lessons? And then you let it go. Ask for what you did in the past. You don't want to carry that around as a burden, but in case there are things in the past that you've got burdens, that are burdensome to the mind, the best way to deal with them is to try to develop as much goodwill, compassion, appreciation, equanimity as you can in the present moment. Try to make it as limitless as possible. There are many passages in the canon where the Buddha said it's precisely these qualities of the mind that help mitigate memories of past mistakes. and also help mitigate the karmic force of past mistakes as well. You can't totally erase them, but you can mitigate them. If you couldn't mitigate them, there'd be no way anybody could get out of the cycle. It'd just be one endless stream of retribution. Because we've all got bad things in the past. But again, when a memory like that comes up in the mind, the question is, what are you going to do with it? The Buddha doesn't advise remorse. He advises developing the proper attitude. One, being determined not to repeat the mistake. And then two, trying to develop as much limitless goodwill as you can for all beings. It's interesting looking over the passages in the canon that deal with the activities they say are meritorious, giving, virtue, and the development of goodwill. Giving and virtue give their benefits right now and on into the future. But it's only the development of the attitude of goodwill that actually encompasses dealing with results of actions in the past. The images of an enormous river like the River Ganges. Put a crystal of salt in the River Ganges and you can still drink the water. It's not too salty because there is so much water compared to the salt. If you were to put that same crystal of salt in a glass of water, you couldn't drink it because the amount of water was so small. In the same way, when you develop an attitude of goodwill that doesn't have any limits, helps mitigate the impact of past actions. So there is something you can do in the present moment about past actions. You can't totally erase them, but you can mitigate their impact. So if that's what's coming up in the mind, memories of the past, develop goodwill. If anticipations of the future are coming up in the mind, reflect on death, because you don't know what's going to happen. You have to be prepared for that eventuality as well. Someone once said that wisdom starts with reflection on death, realizing you don't have all the time in the world. You can't just do anything you want to. You've got to figure out what you're going to do with the small amount of time remaining to you. What's the best use of your life? And again, that boils down to, what are you doing right now? If you're putting the mind in shape so that death won't shake it, again, you're doing the right thing with right now. And why does death shake the mind? Because we identify with the body. We identify with feelings, perceptions, thought constructs, sensory consciousness. As long as we identify with things, we're going to be shaken not only by death, but also sometimes by the slightest changes in these things. Things seem to be nice, and all of a sudden something comes up unexpectedly, and we're rocked by it. So the path of practice that allows us to let go of these things, that's the path of practice that's best use of our time right now. There's a passage where a group of monks are going to a strange land. So they go to see Sariputta to say goodbye. And he asks them, suppose someone asked you, what does your teacher teach you? What are you going to say? Apparently they hadn't thought about this. So they said, well, what would you say? And he says, he teaches the abandoning of attachment to the five khandhas. And the next question would be, well, what advantage do you see in that? Because when the five khandhas change, the mind is not shaken by them. That's Sariputta's synopsis, what the whole teaching is all about. And this is what we're working to, what they call the unshakable release of the mind. It involves virtue, concentration, discernment, what they call heightened virtue. And you really are meticulous about your precepts. You really are meticulous about your actions. Heightened mind, which is the development of strong concentration. Heightened discernment is the discernment that sees through our attachments. These are all activities, things we can do. And then there's release, which is the fourth of what they call the noble dhammas. That's not something you do, it's the result. But this is where they're all headed. This is where they're all aimed at. It's what they call the karma that leads to the end of karma. Because you bring the mind to a point, and you have to actively do this. You have to actively train the mind in this direction. It's not simply a matter of going back to its what might be assumed to be its original nature. And there was always the question, what if even it had an original nature that you could talk about, what would be the purpose of that? Because the original nature got defiled. And if we go back to the original nature, well, it's just going to get defiled again. We want something that can't be defiled. Something that can't be trapped. So this means we have to train the mind in a new direction, bring it to a new point of equilibrium where it hasn't been before. That's the doing. Okay, once it gets there, then there's the non-doing. Release from intention, release from karma. So this is where all our actions should aim. And even before you get to that unshakable release, if your actions are aimed in this direction, then death doesn't hold the fear that it normally would otherwise. Because you build up a momentum. And you will reach a point in your practice when you know that death is not the end. You may not have come to the end of your defilements but at that point, but you know that death is not the end. There is a deathless. And the momentum of your actions toward the direction of the deathless will just keep carrying over, as long as you maintain that determination that this is where you want your actions to aim. Which is why the Buddha has us be very careful about what we do and say and think at all times. We don't act simply on impulse or just because we feel like doing something. We always have to take into consideration, what are the results of our actions going to be? This may seem tiring, but this is why we have concentration practice, to give the mind a place to rest, to know at the very least it's not doing anything unskillful while it rests, and it's building up the qualities it's going to need to keep itself strong in this examination of its actions. John Lee makes a comparison with a knife. If you have a knife that you just keep using, without sharpening it, without coating it with oil, one, it's going to get dull, two, it'll probably get rusty. Then when you try to use it to cut something, it takes a lot of effort to cut through, and many times the rust will contaminate what you've tried to cut. But if you learn how to keep it in the scabbard, bathe it in oil when it needs to be, keep it sharpened, then you pull it out, use it to cut things through. They cut through nice and cleanly. They don't leave any residue, and then you just put it back. That's the mind that has a good place of concentration to stay as its resting point, as its sharpening tools, as its whetstone. And in this way, the constant emphasis on looking at what you're doing becomes less and less onerous, less and less of a burden, because you've got a stronger mind. And you've got a good place to keep it when it's not doesn't have to be actively thinking about things, so that it's not wasting its energy on frivolous matters. And so when the time comes to decide what you want to say, what you want to do, on the one hand, you're not feeling burdened by the events around you. And secondly, you're very clear about what the consequences of your action are going to be. That's why you find that you have less and less to regret in your life. So, days and nights fly past. What are you doing right now? If the Buddha asked you this, what kind of answer would you give? And if you say, I'm very carefully watching what I'm doing, saying, and thinking, it's a good answer. It shows that you're heedful. Those were the Buddha's last words, was to achieve completion through heedfulness. Sometimes translated as by being diligent or being untiring or being earnest, but that misses the point. The point is that you've got this power of action, and it's a potential both for great happiness and for great suffering. I was talking to someone today who raised the question of whether Buddhism was life-affirming or not, or world-affirming or not. And that's not the issue. For the Buddha, the issue is action-affirming. He's affirming the power of your actions. And that's a double-bladed sword. So you have to be careful about what you do. You have to test your comprehension of the Dharma through your actions. And you have to learn how to manage your mind so the kind of vigilance the Buddha recommends is not a burden. Which is why the path basically comes down to three things: virtue, concentration, discernment. The virtue is what keeps you from doing blatant things that are going to be harmful. The concentration is what gives you the strength you need in order to look deeper into the attachments of the mind that cause you to do very subtle harm, so that you can turn them around. You can develop the powers of your mind so they can lead to the ultimate happiness. That's what it's all about. Total release, total liberation. The Buddha said this is the karma that leads to the end of karma. The point where the mind is totally free. What's that freedom like? He doesn't describe it. Some people think of nirvana as a place, but he's very clear that there is no place there. He says it's from unestablished consciousness. Consciousness doesn't plant itself in anything at all, neither here nor there nor in between. But before you get there, be sure your consciousness is very firmly planted here in the present moment. Because it's around here in the present moment that you're going to find this spot that is has no place, no location. It's here. The Buddha gives you the tools to find it. And he tells you there's something really valuable here. Doesn't describe it in too much detail, partly because it can't be described, partly because the description would just get in the way many times. It tells you just enough to know that the standard you need for judging whether you found it or not, is it something constant? Is it something totally free of stress? Is there any sense of attachment to me or mine in there? If it's inconstant, if it's stressful, if there's any attachment to me or mine in there, okay, it can't be what you're looking for, so you keep looking further. But it's here. That's the guarantee. So days and nights fly past, fly past. What are you doing right now? Try to keep coming up with better and better answers for this. Not in terms of the words that you would use to answer the Buddha, but just simply by being very careful about what you do. Because it all comes down to your actions. That's what the teaching is all about.